The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
All right, the boys are back in town. It's the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea.
And the Mega Powers.
Yes, Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com, is the place. Yeah, Dave, welcome back. Welcome back to the Dome.
Thank you, back.
You missed a really good episode last week, man. You really did.
I know. I just wish I didn't have my friggin' phone on Rumble. And then, because I woke up early, and I was like, oh, you know, it's 7 o'clock. I'm still tired. You know, I could get a little bit of Z's in. And then, like, once I woke up, it was 9:45. And I'm like, oh, God, why?
Right. And by the looks of your phone, you've had a couple of Rumbles.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway. Again, I want to thank you again, Greg Klein, for coming on with us last week. It was a really good episode. And Dave and I had this episode in the works already prior to Greg coming on, so this is a good time. And before anything, I want to just give a quick thank you. I know Dave's not happy I sent him the link, but I want to thank Ian Sturgeon for his wonderful intro that he sent us. I won some contest on Facebook.
Yeah,
and Ian's got a website, and he's like, you know, the first three guys that can respond to this, you know, can win a drop an intro. I'm like, this is fantastic, and I played it for Dave. Dave's like, I'm gonna save this for the show.
Yeah. Well. I like, you know, just like the format of the show, I like to keep it old school.
Right.
And old school means I like the old intro better than the new intro. It's just too sleek, too shiny, too new. I can't go for that.
Right, exactly.
So yeah, I'm totally against this new intro, even though, you know, I'm happy you won it. Apparently this guy's gotten around, his name is out there as a voiceover, but... You know, I prefer the old intro. Your voice, like I said, is second to none, so.
I think just for silly purposes, we should just use it once or twice, it sounds professional, and once I get better equipment, it's gonna, I mean, I guess as much as you like my voice, I guess it'll sound a lot better.
And plus, I like how at the end, when you have, like, you know, like, the promos for the other shows, they all start off with, hi, my name is Phil Rea, and then it's like, back to back after back, saying hi, this is Phil Ray, and I love that too, the repetitiveness of it. But you know, that's me.
All right, well, I'm glad I got your input, because it's you're like, I'm gonna save my comments for this. I see you sent me a message, I'm gonna save my comments for the next show. I'm like, that's fantastic,
yeah,
that's awesome. All right, so we upgraded a little bit. You got yourself a computer over there, which is good. Again, like I mentioned before, we had this episode in the works. And I am a big fan of the underdog, period. You know, I'm a big sports guy, and I like to root for the underdog. All my teams play like shit anyway, so I think it serves a better purpose for me as a wrestling fan to once in a while pay some acknowledgement to the underdog. And I say underdog because a lot of wrestlers and tag teams back in the 80s and 90s, guys that didn't get a cut here, would go overseas to Japan, and they would be like megastars.
Yeah, you know, for instance, A-Train, a.k.a., what's his name now?
Devon Dudley?
No, A-Train. Albert.
Yes, Albert. He was with Carl Anderson.
He was with Carl Anderson and Tomko, and... But, you know, in WWE, even now, what's his name? Tensai? He's going under now?
Tensai.
Yeah, he's shit there. He was shit before. But over in Japan, you know, he was a major player. He would get, like, IWGP heavyweight title shots. And him and Anderson, as well as Tyson Tomko, they held the IWGP tag titles, you know, forever. But, you know, back in the States, just another mid-carder.
Yeah.
If even.
You know, it's funny because when you and I first started talking and your extensive knowledge of the of guys in the Orient and
I knew you were going to say the Orient.
Yeah. But, like, you know, it all coincides with the underdog.
Yeah.
A lot of talented wrestlers either got big there and then came here or vice versa or had to go back and come back. And the list is ridiculous. There were guys like the British Bulldogs that were there.
Yeah.
Chris Benoit, ironically I'm naming all Canadians. Chris Jericho was there for a hot minute before Mexico.
Eddie Guerrero
was Black Tiger.
I think the
Dean Malenko, the Malenko brothers were in Japan. Doc and Gordy came back for a little while after they kicked major ass, and that's gonna be another podcast.
Yeah, Stan Hansen.
Stan, of course, the greatest gaijin wrestler
ever
in Japan. Bruiser Brody, same thing. All these guys went to Japan at one point in their career and then had to come back or vice versa and did this. Rob Van Dam, this particular episode is the same kind of format. This is Doug Furness and, well, Phil LaFon, Dan Crawford.
A.K.A. Dan Crawford.
A.K.A. Phil LaFleur. He had like 17 names.
Different versions of Phil LaFon.
And they're the underdogs. These guys were, I mean, both of them, both of them individually, I think, could have contributed major to any territory back then, you know?
Yeah.
We'll start with Doug Furness first. And Doug was an accomplished powerlifter.
Yeah.
Was an accomplished college football player. Was actually drafted by the NFL, even made an NFL camp, if I'm not mistaken. This is all by memory.
Yeah.
But again, not a big guy. 5'11", my height. Actually, Crawford, too, was 5'11". But
just an inch away from greatness.
Well, again, back then, it was a big deal. You wanted a certain look. You know, and it was... That's how they wanted it. Yeah, I'm looking at Doug Furness' stuff now. He went to Broncos training camp. He's a deadlifter. He bench pressed 600 pounds. He deadlifted 814 pounds. I have professional records of all over. He still holds the men's collegiate record, and he's passed away.
Yeah, he recently passed away from, Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
This was about 2 years ago, I believe.
Yep.
So, yeah, that was actually one of the reasons why he retired prematurely after their ECW run, which was their last hurrah as a tag team, so.
But he had a good career. I mean, he was one of those guys. He started in the Continental Wrestling, was part of, that. He wrestled Terry Gordy back then, Sid Vicious, the other Sid Vicious, Sid Udy's version of Lord Humongous, Buddy Landell.
And then the real Nature Boy,
Buddy Landell, right. Was part of the Dudes with Attitude stable in 1990.
I didn't even know he was in that. That was kind of shocking to find that out.
Yeah, that was, I remember that. That was brief. And then, of course, you have, Phil LaFon, who was a Hart Dungeon guy.
Yes.
You know, was discovered in the gym by the British Bulldogs. We just spoke about them.
Yeah.
And he spent 2 years in Stampede. And he worked with the Rougeaus in that territory. And, of course, he met the original Cuban assassin.
Because there's so many Cuban assassins.
Well, there is. There's like three of them. The main guy, though.
The original
Cuban assassin was Angel Acevedo. And he actually booked Phil LaFon to go to Japan. And that's how Furness and LaFon became a tag team.
Yeah, and Baba was the one that put them together.
Bob put them together. 1989 was their... They were big heels. Big time heels when they first started.
Yeah, because they're white people, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
The evil white man invading the Asian territory.
Tell me a bit about their first feud, because this is significant, with Kawada, who we all know Kawada. If you're a wrestling fan, you should know who Kawada is.
Yeah.
And Fuyuki. I don't know a lot about Fuyuki. What do you know about Fuyuki?
Fuyuki? I don't know too much about Fuyuki either. So that one's going to be a bit tough. But what, they went under the name of Footloose.
That was a tag team, yeah.
I don't know how, inspired by the film that they were, but I don't know if they came out to Kenny Loggins, but regardless.
This is 5 years after the movie, maybe.
Yeah, what was this? This was 92.
89.
89, my bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is it? They gave them their first All-Asia Tag Team Championship,
They won it on 89, and then what happened was they feuded for like 2 years, up until 1990. And then they started a feud with Kenta Kobashi in Tiger Mask 2,
which was
A.K. Misawa. Right. And they wrestled a bunch of makeshift tag teams, and, you know, they regained the All-Asian tag team titles.
As far as I know, that they're the standard bearers. They got it for five times.
Yep. And then the team of Dynamite Kid and Johnny Smith, who, what are their names again? You referred to
them? British Bruisers.
The British Bruisers, right.
Yeah, they had like the similar, tights to the British Bulldogs, but, it wasn't quite the same. But regardless, they were still heavy hitters back then. And Johnny Smith, if some of you remember, he was in ECW for a little bit, had a match against RVD. I forgot what, they were the main event for one of the ECW ones. I can't remember at the moment, but
yeah,
time.
We'll pull it up. We're not done with it yet. And, and then this went on to like the early 90s. Different versions, different tag teams were thrown at them. Johnny Ace was the main player back then in All Japan. He teamed up with Kobashi. More gaijins went over there, Joel Deaton and Billy Black. They would hold the belt at one point for over 300 days.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a big deal because guys, American wrestlers, tag teams for that matter, didn't hold belts that long. They went to Mexico for a year, and this was a big deal. They went as the Can-Am Express.
Yes.
And it's a common, of course, misconception that they worked as the Can-Am Connection.
Yeah, because I believe, what was it? I think LaFon teamed with Tom Zenk for a little bit. I think that's where the name actually came from.
Yeah, they started a big feud with the Vianos and the Los Cowboys. And anybody who is a fan of lucha wrestling, the Vianos have been wrestling for like 30 years. There's like 7 of them, 8 of them.
Yeah, there's like an insane amount of Vianos.
There's probably a village of Vianos somewhere in Tijuana.
Yeah, somewhere, by Chico Santana's, hut.
Chico Santana. So, this goes on till the mid-90s. Again, these guys, now, this is before the internet. Tape trading's still big. Promoters are not bringing the smaller guys in as of yet. The gimmick and fringe WWF is still in effect. WCW now is breaking away from the National Wrestling Alliance and still nothing.
Yeah.
Now they go to ECW in 96.
Yeah.
This was Doug Furness going there first, losing to RVD, which was a really good match. There was a whole respect thing, and, RVD challenges him to a tag team match. Of course, RVD chooses Sabu, who he was feuding with for a long time.
Yes.
And, of course, Furness brings in Phil LaFon, Dan Crawford, whatever you want. And then that started for a brief couple of months.
Yeah, and, good thing for these guys coming in because, of course, ECW is more respectful, of a lot of wrestlers past. And they would constantly bring up, like, their All Japan title wins and, wherever they may have been. They would always bring up their history and, prove that these guys aren't just, like, when you go to an indie show and you see somebody and it's like the chant of who are you goes on. At least with the ECW, like, they would say, who these guys, what their history was, where they're coming from, not just throwing them out there.
We talked about this yesterday on the Man Cave, and I brought up that I thought, speaking of ECW, that Joey Styles did a really good job of that.
Yeah.
And I think he was the only guy, outside of even Gordon Solie, before Jim Ross started name-dropping, that not only worked by himself and called matches, but gave you an insight of the wrestler's background, the way they came from. I don't think a lot of guys, and this is before Mike Tenay, and when Mike Tenay was doing it in WCW.
The professor, yes.
But again, I think I think Joey Styles perfected it, and Gordon Solie started it, you know.
Yeah, and with Joey Styles, you know, just to keep this brief, he made it exciting. You know, when you were watching him just, you know, go at it, it wasn't boring. You know, I know a lot of, that was a big thing when he was brought to WWF, like, you know, you can't just have one guy calling all this action. It's like, of course you can. ECW went as long as it did with just one guy calling the action. And he knew his shit, too. So.
No, yeah, absolutely. And that was great on Paulie's part to do that. Cause and Paulie had his pulse on Japan anyway, because at that point, they were exchanging talent with Japan. And they were even exchanging talent with WWF at the time.
Yeah.
So this opens up doors for Phil LaFon now and Dan and Doug Furness. As they sign now to WWF, they made their pay-per-view debut in the 96 Survivor Series, and they teamed up with the Godwins against then tag champs Owen Hart and the Bulldog and the New Rockers, Jannetty and Leaf Cassidy. You know him better as Al Snow. They won the match, got a heel run against the Legion of Doom, and then the car accident happens. Really bad car accident keeps them out of action for a while. They came back in 97, teamed up with the
Hart family.
Yeah. And
Owen Hart and Bulldog.
Team Canada against Team USA. That was cool.
Yeah.
They had one more. They had really, apparently, I couldn't find this match. And I wanted to watch it after I read the wiki. The old Shotgun Saturday Night shows. They had a match against the Hardy Boys.
That was one of the matches I sent you.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, this was when you, this was before I got the, you know.
Yeah.
Before I got your you know, your fucking 7-page Facebook email. but I read this and I was like, oh, I'd love to see that. And then, you know, 48 hours later, I get that from you. So, good job. And then they go back to ECW. And, you know, they have a little bit of a run for about maybe a little over a year. And that was it. They were done.
Yeah. And they had one world tag contention. But that only lasted for less than 24 hours.
No, the match you sent me, they lost the belts to, I believe, Candido and Storm. We'll get into that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Before we get into the list of matches that you sent me, and we're not going to break down every single match hole for hole like we normally do with big cards, but I think Dave wanted to get his point across with the matches that he chose. And I think it gives a... And besides that, you actually gave me the Can-Am Express in All Japan, which is really good. If you this is the IVP one?
No, I got this one for like a long time ago. I don't even remember where.
Because IVP has one also.
Yeah.
But I think this...
I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same.
It's probably the same thing.
Yeah.
But this gives a really good... if anybody who wanted to see about these guys in action, this is a really good intro. And again, these guys were still in their prime.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were old or it was they had a bad run. I mean, they could have stayed off for another 6 or 8 years, I think, in that
point. Yeah, and I even... Well, we'll get into this later. I even sent a somewhat current match of Phil LaFon, and he's still great. He still has it.
Yep, and he recently... Well, he retired, I think, in a couple of years ago. I think in 2010, I think it was. I think he retired.
Yeah, that's at least that's when the match that I have of them... Right. On there, that was the last. That was like the most current that I could find, you know, of him wrestling. So yeah, but we're gonna cover a little bit of every piece of their history, you know, here and there.
Talk about the All Japan Junior Heavyweight Championship match.
Oh my God!
With him and with Dan Crawford and Phil LaFon.
Yeah,
against RVD.
Yeah, Crawford had, I think he had like at least two All Japan Junior Heavyweight Championships. Which is kind of funny because these guys look like heavyweights. They don't, for me at least, I don't know how much they were weighing at that point, but regardless, you know, Crawford rather, held the All Japan Junior Heavyweight Championship and got to face a very young RVD who, you know, despite this being kind of like his like rookie years, this guy was phenomenal. And Dan Crawford himself was very agile guy himself, you know, for being for weighing however much he weighed. He was definitely over 200 pounds for sure. And these guys had this amazing match for the championship on when was it? June 9th of 1995. What were you doing in June of 1995?
I was a year removed from college. I had stopped going to college. I was just graduated high school in 93. So 95, I was working and living at home and going to a lot of shows. Actually, ECW was actually August of 95. I was in Philly that summer.
Really?
I just bought the new ECW. Not to get away from the topic, but I just got the new ECW unreleased volume 2 the other day. And I was on the August 5th show, 1995.
Uh-huh. So, you posted the photo
so
recently.
I was going to Philly, hardcore, 95. I was tape trading, watching a lot of Kobashi and Kawada and Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow, and that was about it. And I wanted to ask you a question, because you probably know a little more about this than I did, and I wanted your... I'm hoping you knew.
Okay.
I want to know how these high prolific teams got singles titles. It was very big in Japan. It never happens in the States. Like, you get like the tag team wrestler who like once in a while gets a tag team a singles title shot, and then all of a sudden it's like this happens all the time in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't American wrestling translate that? Why can't they give a guy, well, not anymore, but then
yeah,
why didn't they do it back in when tag team wrestling was bigger? In the States?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, because a lot of these guys, like when it comes down to Japan, a lot of these guys like, you know, Crawford or Furnace would be there first. So the fans would, you know, get a sense of them as a singles wrestler. And then when they would come back, you know, usually they would get teamed up with somebody. Same case with Stan Hansen. For the U.S., you know, it's kind of hard to say. You know, long gone are the days of Bret Hart and all that. Well, these are the kind of days where, like, everybody wins every title at least once. So it's kind of hard to say, but, you know, a lot of guys like Dan Crawford, they would stand out, like, alone, you know, whether they had, like, a singles run or, you know, through their tag team, you know, matches, you know, there would be something about them, you know. Same thing for Dynamite Kid, but, you know, he was there, he was in New Japan before they brought in Davey Boy Smith. So, again, typically these guys were just that good that they could, you know, get like a singles title run.
So it was in other words, it was whoever got there first got the recognition. Was it always like that? I mean,
I wouldn't go that far, but usually the guys who came in first typically brought in somebody else.
All right,
you know, that's how I could see it. But you know, in this case, Dan Crawford, RVD, you know. At this point, they had already won, like, all their All-Asia Tag Team Championships.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Furnace was on the injured list or what, but, you know, he was at ringside with Dan Crawford for this match and for pretty much his entire junior heavyweight title run. But this match is just, in particular, it's just phenomenal. These guys really play off each other very well. You know, RVD, he's hitting a lot of the spots that, you know, he was known for. You know, all these years, even back then, even back in 95. Actually, there's one point in the match, I really love this. I really love, like, these, like, small little things that you catch during the match and that you just don't see as often these days. And in particular, it was RVD going for the split-legged moonsault.
Right.
And just before he goes up to the rope, Crawford just kicks out the leg before he even touches the rope and, you know, tumbles down on the floor. I'm like, I love that. When it's just like such a small thing like that, because we don't talk about subplexes. That's kind of a secret group, but
very secret. On the down low,
as
they say around the way. Yeah,
you know, there was a little discussion on there, But, you know, about how with old school wrestling, you know, back in the day, it was about trying to get not get put into holds. Nowadays, it's got, you know, guys are just kind of like, you know, spot. You know, it doesn't have to be like a top rope thing or anything like that. Guys are just constantly putting into moves. But, you know, when a guy can, like, cleverly avoid a move like that, and, you know, at that point, that was his move, the split-legged moonsault. He wasn't doing the five-star frog splash,
right.
You know, the split-legged moonsault was his move. That was even his move in WCW. So, like, to avoid it and just do something simple like that, that's where the art of pro wrestling comes in.
You know, and we talked about Doug Furness's singles run in Tennessee with the Continental Championship Wrestling territory. Dave sends me a clip, and he puts in parentheses, "For obscurity's sake," from 1988, Doug Furness then Tennessee Heavyweight Championship against the Detroit Demolition.
And I'm pretty sure most people don't know what Detroit Demolition is all
about. No, it was actually Randy Cooley who was the original Demolition Smash.
Yes.
Before Barry Darso took over, yeah. Right? Okay, so I was right about that. Okay, that's without reading it, thank God. I'm still not at 39 now. I'm not losing my mind yet.
Yeah, so Detroit Demolition has a shot against Doug Furness, which is kind of even stranger because I was digging even deeper. And apparently Detroit Demolition was part of a stable called the Honor Guard in Continental Championship Wrestling with a bunch of other obscure guys. I forgot to bring my notes today.
It's okay because we can cover that territory in another podcast.
Yeah, we'll do a special on the Honor Guard in the future.
Well, listen, I like to, again, the more we bring up old clips, the more that we find these territories had some really good, obscure gems,
yeah.
Good or bad, and pertaining to whatever subject you and I are talking about at the time, I just think it's pretty cool that, you know, the Continental Championship Wrestling had guys like Doug Furness and Randy Cooley and the original Nature Boy, Buddy Landell.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So
The real
Nature Boy, quote unquote. Not Buddy Rogers, but, you know, not Ric Flair, but Buddy Landell. Again, that, you know, it was just nothing fancy, nothing spectacular. It was just Doug Furness, you know, $1 million body, great look. He again, really good wrestler, collegiately and professionally.
Yeah, and what was it in Continental? Continental Championship Wrestling? Yeah, they would even display, you know, some of his powerlifting. Of course, you know, Dino Bravo did it in WWF.
The Road Warriors, the Powers of Pain.
All of them. They all had, like, their moments to, you know, lift in front of the audience. And the dude, he powerlifted 750 pounds on pre-taped television. How about that?
A lot of guys did it, and I know the Road Warriors were infamous for it, especially Animal. Animal was the guy in the gym that could, you know, probably squat a half of a stable of bulls, you know, if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But Doug Furness, to this day, rest his soul, still holds national records, you know, in deadlifting and squatting and stuff like that. So he was, guys, strong dudes did it. He was the real deal.
Yeah, there was no Jesse Ventura there to lift up the barbell.
Right, exactly, you know? Exactly.
There was none of that. This guy was the real deal and phenomenal wrestler.
You know, and then you sent me a clip and WWE did put out a list of the most boring tag teams, and I, again, you want my opinion on it. This was at a time where they're no longer selling wrestling, they're selling entertainment. And if you ask me to put Furness and LaFon in my favorite tag teams, they're probably in my top 10 because of their accomplishments in Japan and their glimpses of good that they had here in the States,
yeah,
with WWE and with ECW.
Yeah, and this was like a still a good time in WWF history while they were there, where, you know, guys could still have great matches. And actually, I'm kind of pissed off a little bit because of the boring tag team, you know, match that they put up of theirs. You know, it's against TL Hopper, Dirty White Boy.
Dirty White Boy Tony Anthony.
From USWA. That's and right. Mr. X. We don't know where he's from.
Parts unknown, dude.
Yeah.
I thought Parts Unknown was in a part of Jersey I drove through yesterday, but it wasn't. It's not, you know.
Well, if Matt Bowman's living there, maybe.
Shout out to Matt, by the way.
Yeah.
Shining Wizards Matt did a fantastic job on my birthday yesterday, so thank you again. I know I said it in pre-production.
Give a shout out to his pizza place. You were telling me about
Pizza
this.
Vita is the shit, man. And God bless. And again, I was very skeptical. Again, I'm very, you know, when it comes to pizza and Italian food, I'm a Brooklyn guy. I'm very biased. I don't eat pizza out of New York ever. I try not, unless it's Pizza Hut or unless it's, you know.
I've had pizza in Japan. It was fine.
So, all right. Do you know what? It's just me being biased. And I'm opening my palate to other locations, okay?
Yeah.
But Matt, thank you. Rihanna, thank you. Thank you to Pizza Vita. My wife was beside herself, so.
Yes. But back to this boring tag team.
Back to the boring tag team match.
Yo, okay, I can understand where WWE's coming from because they didn't really give them, you know, they were just them. There was like no tag team name. It was just Furnace and LaFon. They just went out there, kicked ass. And this clip, you know, granted it's TL Hopper, but still, you know, Dirty White Boy Tony Anthony, he was still like a star in USWA. Still a phenomenal wrestler, knew how to sell. This match is amazing. They kill him. They kill off TL Hopper with the friggin' Cobra Clutch Suplex, German style.
Love that.
And you know, come on, really. You know, when you do a move to a guy like that, especially the weight of Tony Anthony, Jesus Christ, this man is like almost 300 pounds. You know, you got to give props, you know, to these guys. You know, even though they weren't, you know, promo guys, you know, any of that kind of stuff, these guys could still kill it in the ring. And which I'm kind of surprised that they didn't really get, you know, much of a run. But then, then again, at the time, you know, they were facing, talent like the Legion of Doom and, you know, the other match I had up here. Bulldog and Owen. You know, granted, Bulldog wasn't, you know, a mic guy. But, you know, he still got off on, you know, his history and his look and his physique. And, you know, teaming up with Owen Hart, who had total package right there, you know, it was tough competition, but these guys had some, particularly with Bulldog and Owen, they had like an incredible little feud going on there. And the match that I got for you, what was it? It was off of a Raw. Despite the titles not being on the line, oh my God, like this was just like real great, you know, back and forth action.
Yeah, it's there, and then the swan song. What in WWE was with against a then unknown tag team, the Hardy Boys,
yeah,
and Shotgun Saturday Night, and you know I thought their last ECW run was good, and they won the belts only to drop them, you know, a day later, which you actually sent me the match. Which
actually that's not the match.
That's not the match.
No, that's a match between Candido and Storm, but it's I'm guessing it had to have happened either before or after because they actually lost it in a three-way dance.
With, Balls, Mahoney, and was it Axel Rotten, I think it was? I forget. But you know what? Let me pull up the wiki.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. They lost it on December 6th.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was it. But, you know, it's... And then the other good match you sent me... Well, you sent me the MPW match... Which was really good.
NPW?
Yeah,
NPW. Yeah.
That was Phil LaFon's run right before he retired.
Yeah, actually it was 2011.
Right, but talk to me about the match number 9 in it. Well, the Bulldogs was... The matches against the Bulldogs were fantastic.
Yeah, particularly because, for one thing, you know, they were more or less discovered by the Bulldogs, but they had like a similar style to them, and, you know, same kind of trade-off. You know, you had the agile... heelish, you know, wrestler, the technical wrestler in Crawford, who's similar to the Dynamite Kid in a way, and you got Furnace, who's the power lifter, you know, strong style, similar to David Boy Smith.
Same thing as the Bulldogs, exactly.
So yeah, these guys had like a number of matches in All Japan Wrestling. The one that I pulled up, I think, is like the most common match. Incredible match just between them. You know, nothing I could pull out in particular. Just watch it, and you can just see these similar styles just going at it.
And then one of the tag team championship matches that Kenta Kobashi was in, because he's been like a dozen of them against these guys.
That was actually the five-star match.
The five-star match with Tsuyoshi Kikuchi. Am I saying that right?
Yep.
What do you know about Kikuchi? Anything?
I don't have my notes with me. So.
Okay. That's all right. No, it's no big deal. But again, it was in that their high time, you know. It was those matches were so good, you know. Well, I mean, a lot of them were just fantastic.
Yeah. It was just, you know, you had this one particular tag team, again, you know, just an anomaly that a white, you know, foreigner tag team has the tag team championship for this long, you know. Well, All Japan was particularly the group that was more gaijin friendly. You know, they would have, you know, your Miracle Violence Connection. They would have your Stan Hansons. And, you know, and all those guys, Johnny Ace. They were all there. They were top guys. They weren't just, you know, here for a tour or two and then they were off. No, they were mainstays. So the fact that, you know, Furnace and LaFon were able to make a career out of that, particularly in All Japan, is, you know, quite a feather in their caps. And obviously, you know, it took, you know, they were able to get to the WWF and have a, somewhat decent run. They didn't win the belts, but got their names out there. So, yeah.
What intrigues me even more about American wrestlers in the Orient is that not one guy was bad. Like, they weren't like these gimmick guys that went over there and got a career. Every guy that wrestled there and was a legitimate fan favorite, whether they were good or bad, were fantastic workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a credit to the Japanese, and it's the credit to their appreciation for professional wrestling. We've talked about that on other shows too. I think that you know, every guy that was there, going back to the 70s, you know, with Andre and Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen, and you know every salute, and then they get the guys that went over there. It was like, oh man, it was all guys were just really good workers, you know. So the $1,000 question now is, out of both guys, who do you think would have a better singles run? Now that we've had both of them wrestle individually on these clips,
I would say Phil LaFon, just because I was kind of surprised about this too, but he only really let it out during his junior run, as far as I can tell. But you know, he would play to the crowd. He would, you know, he would be a heel. But with Furnace, I never really saw him give too much of his personality, so I'm going to have to call Phil LaFon, just because he was more, I felt he was a bit more artful in his approach in the ring, and, you know, whether it was his wrestling style or his personality. Like, the guy had, like, a very, you know, Ric Flair kind of, you know, granted it wasn't, you know, he wasn't as good as Ric Flair, you know, personality-wise, but still, like, he had that kind of cockiness to him that I felt, if he really let it out of himself, you know, maybe in the WWF they would have had, you know, a better run.
All right, Dave, so there it is.
Yeah.
Furnace and LaFon, Furnace and Crockett. Crockett and Tubbs, whatever you want to call him. No, again, underrated, underutilized, and quite frankly, one of the best tag teams ever in the business.
Absolutely.
Ever. So that's going to wrap it up for episode 33. We're moving right along. I think we need to get to 50 by the end of the year. We could do it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we got more than enough stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, really? You found all the stuff on YouTube?
Yeah, well, I'll post up all the matches for everybody to check out. Because there's like 11 matches or 10 matches. So
right.
You're going to have fun.
Yeah, and I'm prepping for a yard sale, so I found like 5 tapes today that I'm going to go through and pull out some Jim Dandies of matches, I'm sure. Gems, if you will. What's your Twitter handle?
It's the Mr. Powers.
Right.
So THEMR Powers.
Right. So follow Dave on Twitter. The kids on the Facebook want to do a Fantasy Warfare. Rebook an angle. Rewrite an angle. We're going to start that soon. You already have one that you wanted to fix.
Yes.
So let's start that up. What was the angle you wanted to fix and put on the Facebook page?
It's a completely brand new idea. Technically it's a rebooking. I would have taken instead of Honky Tonk Man winning the Intercontinental title, I would have switched it to Bam Bam Bigelow, who was in the WWF at that time.
He had just come in after that, though. Him and the Powers of Pain came in at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, all right, guys. So there you go. That's your rewrite. Dave just booked it. You're putting Bam Bam Bigelow as the heel, beating Ricky Steamboat.
For the Intercontinental.
For the IC belt.
Yes.
All right. So there you go. That's the run. Is Oliver Humperdinck still his manager?
No.
Really?
Well, maybe. Well, I don't know. Since he didn't really do too much, you know, as a manager.
Not was, there anyway.
Yeah. No. You know, he was a face manager, so that was kind of a bit odd.
Okay.
But maybe as a heel manager.
Give him a Bobby Heenan or a Slick or
Jimmy Hart. Yeah. We'll get into more depth about my thoughts on that.
All right, so that's it, guys. The best rewrite of Dave's angle will get a prize, and that's going to be about it. Until next week, we will be back with another kick-ass throwback.
How's everything going with our mystery guest?
Our mystery guest is calling me back. I'll give you a couple of hints to the audience. He is a former Intercontinental Champion, a former Tag Team Champion. And a WWE Hall of Famer.
Yes.
You made a reference to him in this episode, and that we'll keep it as that.
Yeah.
We made a couple of references to a few IC champions, so.
Yeah.
So if you guys could get that, you'll know who hopefully our next guest is.
Yeah.
But Dave, thank you so much for coming through. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here.
All right. And we will be back next week with another kick-ass episode. Until then, peace and chicken grease.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
This is the Black Scorpion, and when I'm not looking for Sting, I'm listening to the Shining Wizards podcast, shiningwizards.com. Be a mark, buy the shirt. I'm coming for you, Sting.
Neckbreaker Podcast! Neckbreaker Podcast is a pro wrestling and heavy metal themed podcast. Guest interviews, wrestling headlines, and metal news while your hosts Brian and John get completely fucking shit-faced. Past guests include Eric Bischoff, Fit for an Autopsy, Power Glove, and many, many more. Join them exclusively on the Shining Wizards Wrestling Network. Neckbreaker Podcast!
Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Please check out my boys Mike and Adam, hosts of the Midnight Jury Podcast, the only podcast that transports you back to the last old school generation as they debate in detail 80s and 90s pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture. Before the internet, before Blu-ray, before cell phones, there was the last old school generation. So check out my boys on the Midnight Jury exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. Hey, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out two professional wrestlers, Pat Buck and Kevin Matthews, and some other guy, Jay Silva, giving insight to the wonderful yet corrupt industry of pro wrestling. Check out Two and a Half Wrestlers, the bad boys of podcasting, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. Hey guys, Phil Raya here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out Pro Wrestling 101. It's a show about the ins and outs of pro wrestling, hosted by 20-year veteran of the Squared Circle, Just Incredible. Now, that's not just the best, that's not just the coolest, that's Just Incredible on the Shining Wizards Network. Hey, Phil Ray here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Listen to Wrestling Soup every Thursday night, 10:15 p.m., live on WrestlingSoup.com. Anthony Missionary Thomas, Joey Numbers, best fans in the world. It's a complete shitstorm. Trust me, I know. It's got everything. It's got bitches. It's got bagels. It's got retarded women. It's got everything. Check it out. WrestlingSoup.com. Wrestling-news.com. That's right. Wrestling-news.com.
Those are my pals, Don Tony and Kevin Castle, one of the best shows on the planet, spot on predictions, awesome, awesome commentary, and they're a bunch of cool dudes. Check them out exclusively on wrestling-news.com, live every Monday, right after Raw, 11:15. Tell them Phil sent you, and you'll get completely nothing. Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out my two buds, Will Sweeney, Chris Espo, Tattoos and Touchdowns, all football, all the time, every Tuesday live, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com. Tattoos and Touchdowns, baby.